Hey, you listen to this podcast. Go to myplayvolution.com, click the Amazon icon, bookmark that page, and use it every time you shop on Amazon. It's a way for you to support the show without costing you anything. And it's a win-win-win. Amazon wins because you buy their stuff, and you win because you get stuff. And we win because we get a few pennies per purchase. Win-win-win. What could be better? Come on, do it. Please?
One, two, three.
Hey, we're starting a revolution. A play revolution. A playvolution. Get it? Come on over and check it out at www.myplayvolution.com. It's an online community for parents and early learning professionals who want
to
chat and share information and talk and educate themselves and educate others about what's going on in the early learning profession. Let's face it, Facebook and Pinterest and Twitter aren't as warm and cuddly as we might like them to be. This is your community, a place you're going to help create. Come on over. Don't be afraid. Check it out. Jump in. Support the community. Be the community. We need you. Got it? See you there.
Yeah.
Welcome to another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. I'm Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio where everybody is completely sober.
For now.
For the moment. I'm here with Lisa Murphy.
Hola.
Danita Dinger.
Hello.
Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And via phone, Leslie Romanoff.
Hi.
Hey, you're still there. I thought with that long
introduction,
I thought with that long introduction, you might have given up and went away. So
no, I didn't.
I'm glad you stuck around. So we're interviewing Leslie today. I first became aware of Leslie via Facebook because that's where I spend a lot of time. Because she is like one of the boss people at Tacoma Park Cooperative Nursery School. Did I say it right? Did I get the whole thing right?
Yeah, and you get extra points for getting all the words into the sentence.
And they post amazing stuff on Facebook, and so we were going to be passing through the neighborhood, so of course I invited ourselves to visit, and we hung around in the program for half a day or so, and then of course we had cocktails, we wanted to bring Leslie in because we wanted to hear more about the co-op model of programs, because that's something Lisa's a big fan of, and so the program was established in 1944, Leslie?
Yeah, it's 1942 was the first day that they held a class, the first in the fall. And then 1944, the Maryland State Department of Education recognized them as a school. So,
and have you been there since?
Time.
Have you been there since then?
Yeah, and it's amazing because if you think about it, how a group of parents that change every 4 to 5 years basically keep something running for that long. That's the amazing part of the story, because I don't know if any other kind of company or anything would work that way.
Yeah, it's essentially changing the board of directors every couple of years, huh?
Exactly. Yeah, every 2 to 3 years, we get almost a whole new board of directors. Every 5 years, we get almost a whole new population. So depending on if you have more than 3 or 4, you know, if you have 3 or 4 kids that go through the school, you can get a longevity, let's say.
Yes.
Most of the people, it's like 4 to 7 years, I would say. Yeah.
So, Lisa Murphy, I know you're a big fan of the co-op model. Ask some questions.
I am. I'm actually, are you a half day? Are you a traditional co-op? A half
We're
day?
We're a half day,
okay.
Yeah. Half day.
I've been kicking around whether or not a full day co-op model would work, and have often thought that it's the I have experienced enough parent input that have not experienced it, but they've shared that because they work untraditional hours that they have the time. I think often there's just a thought that a co-op can or nursery school even can only just be a half day. But after I closed my school back in 2009, I kind of joked that the only way I would go back into owning something like that is if it was a co-op model. And then I threw on the table, you know, I wonder how effective or how successful a full day co-op model would be. And I just wanted to get, that's what I kind of came to the table with when I heard that you were a co-op person. I was like, you know, I want to get some input on that. Not that I have no real agenda in like behind my question, just so you know, but I'm like, oh, I wonder if anybody else has ever thought about that or if anybody even has even done it or if people know out the gate it wouldn't be successful. But I know in my town, there's so many like firefighters and ambulance people and, you know, people who work the weird night shift and a lot of hospital workers. And they're like, oh yeah, I could give you 3 days a week. I could give you 3 days a month in exchange for that. And I'm like, huh, I wonder if that model would even work. So that's kind of what I'm sitting around the table with here today,
Madeira. Let's back up just one step in case there's other people out there like me who I have a general idea what a co-op
you
is.
You
want
to explain?
But what exactly,
no,
you know,
point,
what is the
point.
Commitment? What is the average commitment of a family? I mean, they in exchange for this, their child attending, they help. So there's no, they don't pay at all either? Or
no, let me tell you. Yeah. I'll answer it two ways almost. It's like there's our school and then there's lots of other cooperative models. So it depends on your state, depends on your location. It also depends on your like parent community, basically. But first and foremost, you start with bylaws. And every school that I know that can stand the test of time basically starts with a set of bylaws, which basically outline what you're talking about, both of you. So it's like we can say, parents work in the classroom or parents don't work in the classroom. They do serve on committees. They don't serve on committees. They're on the board of directors. That's just basic. But like at our school, we have what I usually call like a high level of commitment, which means that you're in once a week, one morning a week. And our school used to be full day. So we only recently moved to the location that that you all visited, right? That we bought that building in 2001. We used to be in a church, and we were able to, the space was much larger, so we were able to run a full day program. So it was a half day in the morning co-op, so the parents could come in and do their 2.5 hour, 3 hour shift in the morning, and then we would have an extended day. So just think about it, like those people who can do that, they can give us 3 hours, end up with a full, you know, the opportunity for a full day that they could either take or not take, because some people don't want that full day. Some people do, and some people don't. Some people need it. So anyway, and then there's other cooperative models that you can buy out of your classroom commitment, and you pay a little bit more. Or there's some that will allow for nannies or other like grandparents and other people to co-op for you. And but there are cooperative models that are full day. And and they'll have a partial day commitment usually. So because not many parents can say, oh yeah, I'll be with you all day.
True.
You know who those become? The people who can stay with you all day become your teachers later.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Right.
our goal is to kind of create our replacements, basically. So, like for me, I used to be in radio, television, film. I used to be a video producer, and I started at the co-op and never left because I liked it. And so a lot of people who go into early childhood education or into education were processed through like a parent co-op. So it's like we build an army.
Well, that's a good model really for any industry as you start looking for who's the pipeline fulfillment, you know, filling it up.
Exactly. So did that answer your question a little bit?
Yes.
So I vote yes, Lisa.
Yeah.
I think yes, you should. And especially when you start talking about people who have flexible schedules, because the co-op model our parents do work. They, you know, most of them work. There's a cohort of parents that have stay at home, either a stay at home, you know, one or the other stays at home, so they have a little bit of flexibility. But the for the most part, we're looking for flexibility in your work hours. So some people actually take vacation time to co-op, and some people have, like, they'll work on weekends, so they have that time on a Wednesday morning that they can come in. So way in advance, we set up our co-oping schedule a year, in May, June of the year before the school year starts, so that these people know how to arrange their schedules.
I really want to. I want to comment on what you just said. I like how you framed that language of we're looking for people who have flexibility in the schedule. Because I do think in the early childhood community there still is kind of that stereotype of it's only the stay-at-home moms that can benefit from this model. And I'm glad to hear that you have some knowledge and experience in the fact that that has been pushed. You know, that envelope, so to speak, has been pushed, and that there are models for people to see that a full day co-op can work. That's awesome. This is the happiest news I've gotten so far today, other than all of us being back together again.
Technology helps with that because there's a lot of people that work from home or whatever that they can escape for that couple hours and not even harm their work day. You know, they don't even have
to. Exactly. And I think that's like one of the things that we've seen, that I've seen personally, because like I said, it's like I started back in in the 90s. And so I've seen this like a developmental arc in family styles, right? So it's like, you know, we used to have at least one person was a stay at home, and that was the way it was shaped, right? And then basically the co-op model started back in the early 1900s and always has been viewed as a vocational training spot for women, right? So it's like it's a placeholder for before they go back into the workforce. And because it's not just teaching, it's also administration and running a school. And at our school, there's like fundraising components and there's outreach components and there's all these other different things. So it's like that was like this placeholder, was a training ground for people. Huh. So then what happened over the course of time is that, of course, everybody starts working. Everybody is really, really working outside of the house. And then you find out that, wait a minute, no, there's actual flexibility. There's flex time built in so that some people can work on Tuesdays through, you know, Friday. You know, there's all these different options that I think that the world is embracing. So to us, it works in our favor because we go back to this thing where, yes, you can come in. We just have to work it out in advance.
I like that a lot.
So you've had... Okay, here we go. The parent thing, great, great. Community, build relationships, all that kind of stuff. But isn't it just as annoying as hell sometimes having parents around? I don't know if you can answer that because your parents might listen to this, but my experience just being family child care and center-based is some parents are...
needy?
So how's that work?
Well, I'm like laughing. It's like so funny. Yeah, because it's the thing. Yeah, the thing is that here it goes back to this deal. Is like I have to remember that I'm a parent too, and I was one of those parents. This is why I'm laughing is because I was one of those parents that was actually like. My husband used to kick me under the table during parent-teacher conferences and say, stop saying that. And I was like, well, you know. I would come back and say, why wouldn't he pull his shirt over his head while you're talking? I was like, you know, so I would get kicked. So I was like, anyway. So there's a little bit of that where I have to go back to my own experience and say, wait a minute, what would I want as a parent? And then the other thing is that you have a constant audience. Mm. So one year I had three parents. They were English PhDs, and they were all co-oping on the same day. It was such a gift. So when I would read story or when I would talk to the children, I was really aware of all the grammatical errors that I would throw.
I would be sweating like crazy.
It was like, the whole time I was like, oh, I can't believe I just said that. Oh, I can't believe I just said that. Yeah. So there's a little bit of that. But then the other thing is that this idea that you have to say, I'm partnering with these people, they are part of my co-oping team. I am part of their team and they're part of mine. And I have to say, this goes back to Tasha, you said this. Who said Danita about the technology bit?
Yeah.
Who said that?
That was Danita.
Listen. So here's the technology bit that was actually a gift is that when I first started, you know, the internet was kind of like new and we didn't know what was going on with it and what do we do with it and stuff like that. And now we have like all these internal modes of communication, and those have actually benefited us in creating a solid team. So what happens is that we have internal blogs that we send out to the parents, and there's they have opportunity to comment back, and so that there's this conversation that's built in a kind of a different way. So, like, you know, when you're like face to face with people, sometimes it's more difficult to talk about difficult things. And this, the internet has, I mean, the technology that we have available to us has actually provided this opportunity for us to take one step back and have difficult conversations. And to be able to like come back to level the playing field basically and say we're going to go back in and we're all in this together, right?
Do you think that is a successful what's the word I'm looking for? Do you have success in dealing with challenging topics via technology because you have relationships that have occurred and deepened and strengthened prior?
I'm
wondering how, you know, somebody who hasn't been around for a while, I don't really have a question here. I'm just more having a response to, I'm wondering if that's working because y'all know each other
well. That prior relationship. Yeah.
Because I'm just thinking, you know, I'm imagining somebody brand new being a part of an email conversation about something stressful at the co-op and just not having any context with that person, you can just so misread, I think, that. So I think that's a testimony to the success of the relationships that you are building. And I also want to say, forgive me, I love how you used co-oping as a verb as opposed to a noun, because I think that's another thing that I think the ECE community projects onto it, is that this co-op is this place. It's a co-op school. And you did it very subtly, but I really kind of honed in on that, the idea of co-oping. I like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I would have never noticed that, and I do use co-oping as a verb.
Yeah,
I wrote it on
in English here. Watch what you say, Leslie.
It was very good.
I have a comment.
Yeah.
How often do you get all the parents together? Do you have like a training for them?
This goes back to our school. So at the cornerstone of every cooperative is supposed to be parent education. That's the cornerstone, right? So, and at our school, our parent education happens. We have a combined business meeting and training session monthly. And then before you go into the classroom, we have an orientation that happens the year before May. But, you know, some people join afterwards. So for sure, at the beginning of the school year, it's a required attendance. You have an orientation and a parent workshop that sets you up for co-oping in the classroom. And then we have, like, these monthly meetings. So, for instance, this last meeting that was just that happened last week, the topic of conversation was caring for yourself. You know, it's compassion, self-compassion, which is like something that you all talk about all the time. The self-compassion thing, it's so important because it's so easy to forget as a parent and as a grown-up, you know, as a teacher, you just forget it. It's like that thing moves off to the back burner. You always have to move it back to the front burner. So we have different training sessions, and then we always try to make sure that there's like this nugget that you could take into the classroom and into the and home. So we have a set of language. We have language that's unique to our school. We have, which I guess is like that co-oping verb. I wonder how many other things that we say all the time we just don't even take for granted. So anyway, so yeah,
it's
monthly.
I bet you say genius all the time, Leslie. I'm just guessing.
All the time, right? All the time.
This is a very probing, important question. How's your tree? The big tree?
The big tree. I don't know. We're waiting for the second. I don't know what to call it, but the shelf, another shelf to occur of that fungus. Uh-huh. So just in case bring you all up to speed, we have a heart rot. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So we have heart rot in our large central tree, and this hickory tree, and so we have this one shelf of fungus, and we're waiting for the second one to come. And when the second one comes, it just tells us that it's progressed further. And then the next event, you know, it's like I said, it's like on one hand I'm really sad about it, and on the other hand I'm really excited about it. I don't know if that's the thing to do
because this tree is going to die, correct?
Well, okay. but if you have to take it down, then you got all that wood you get to do fun stuff with.
Yeah,
so.
we have wood, and we have another climbing structure to offer.
And then the children will grow fungus on them, and it'll be a movie.
Yeah, exactly. And then I was laughing when you said that about the ducks, because, you know, we had all that snow last week, and every time you walk around, we have these two or three stuffed rabbits. You can't ever tell because you don't know where they are, but it's not real rabbits. They're
okay,
stuffed. And
for lunch,
when they have
we're
snow and they've been frozen
rabbits.
To the ground, they look really real.
Oh, so funny.
When one of the things that helped me fall in love with their Facebook page is they picked up someplace some duck decoys, just plastic duck decoys, and there's just, if you look through their photo albums, there's just all kinds of pictures of these ducks having all kinds of different adventures and in different places, and it's lovely.
Well, and I want to hear.
Tasha just pulled up a picture of the.
I want to hear about your program.
Picture of a duck.
Can we talk more about what are the benefits to a co-op? I mean, what types of learning can occur? What I mean, are there more
pros
ongoing
and cons?
Projects going on because of the extra hands of adults in there to. Or do the extra hands of the adults get in the way sometimes of the children? You know, do you have a hard time with parents getting in there and helping a child who's struggling too much and not letting them be independent? I mean, just tell more.
Right. Okay.
More.
So I actually have this great story for you because this just happened last week. With the ice, right, with the snow and ice that we have, there was a tire that had frozen itself to the ground, right?
Awesome.
And the, you know how, you all know this without me even telling you, you know how ice becomes this, like, precious thing, right?
Yeah.
So it's like they have to collect it. Children have to collect it. They have to crush it. There's, like, a thing, right? So this tire had ice in its rim, and it was frozen down, so the kids couldn't get out. They had figured out that if you bounce the tire, that little ice ring will bounce out with it. So they couldn't get the ice out, so it was perplexing them. It was like five kids. And we have, at this point, we had four adults out on the playground. Okay, so the kids are all like, you know, the first thing that they'll do when you have four adults is that they'll try it themselves, right? And then they'll turn and they're like, when it doesn't work, they're like, hey, one of you people, you big people, come over here and get this tire up right away. And interestingly, none of us did. Right? We all went over and we're like, yeah, that's frozen. And we tapped it with our foot. Yep, it's pretty frozen. And one of the dad co-oping said, I wonder if you could wedge it up. That's all he said. And the kids were like, they all rallied and they were like, how are we going to do this? And then they found a broken broom handle and a brick and they wedged it up and they popped it up off the ice.
Awesome.
Now, so the thing is that they did this, right? And the cool thing is that somebody, one of the adults is there to label it lever, you know, they labeled it, right? So these children discovered it by themselves. We didn't do it for them. They discovered it themselves. And then there was a grown-up near enough to, like, label it for them. So that's the win. But let me just tell you something. Like, that event takes a lot of hard work and training to get to. So I'm telling you the story because we were also having information sessions and open house tours. And so I told that story to a group of people that were touring the school because these people may come to our school next year if they apply and they're accepted and everything. So it was important to tell them this story because they need to know that when they're here at the school, they're going to have to do the same thing. They have to stand back. Mm-hmm. They can't become stars of the show. So when parents ask, like, can I teach, can I be the teacher, how much can I bring to the program, what you're bringing has to be a certain kind of thing, right? You're all trained to do it. We're all trained because we've been doing this for a long time. So we have to get the parents up to speed really quickly. So they needed to know that when something like that happens, they have to stand back.
Awesome.
From our visit, one thing I really noticed that it struck me right away is how good Leslie is at modeling this. The intention in her language, not only with the kids, but with us as visitors and with the parents, is just right on point. And I saw, just in the short time we were there, parents modeling her language in situations. And so they are constantly, well, they're like the kids. They're constantly watching the staff, I think. Well, not all of them, I'm sure. But I could really tell that there were parents that had been doing a lot of time paying attention to the way Leslie handled stuff. And then that informed the way they would go about handling situations when they they encountered them.
So what is What is the average ratio of parents to children? Like, how big is a class and how many parents at a time?
Get ready.
We're sitting.
Okay. So get ready. So the state requires that there's four adults in a classroom of 12 two-year-olds. So it's four adults, 12 kids. So it's one teacher, three parents.
Wow.
And that's required. So that's, you know, that makes sense. If somebody has to get their diaper changed or something like that, somebody's gone, right? Then in the older classes, we have 16 to 18 kids, and there's one teacher and three adults. And then in the 4 or 5 class, it's 18 kids, one teacher, four adults. That's a lot, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thinking and a lot of adults. Okay.
So we have things that I don't think that we would be able to do otherwise if we had fewer adults. Like, for instance, each child has a journal. They, you know, 4 to 6 kids record in their journal daily, and it's a parent's job to record their story and help them, you know, to work with them while they draw a picture. So, you know, things like that. Like, oh, and also the artwork. Like, I don't know if we would be doing the artwork the same way. Like, would I use as many brushes as I use if I had to wash them?
Mm.
I'm being honest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? We all wash them together. There's 4 people that can pull this off. So, yeah, you want another brush? Have one. Have 5.
Yep. There you
go. Know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, like, depending on how, you know,
Tasha's
everybody, like,
sink.
Kind of situates themselves differently depending on their environment, right?
And so do, I'm sure some of your parents bring specific skills or interests or something to the program that you're able to take advantage of sometimes too, huh? I'm thinking about your building stuff dad.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
Right. So here's the thing. Like, we're just coming off these information sessions. So we use 2 examples in the information session. One is that, for instance, this is something that everyone knows. You have to write down your snack for the day. Or, you know, some people pre-report it. We just have snacks. So in our state, we have to record it. So we used to have this clipboard. People would forget to sign, you know, write it in. Or, like, you know, if your kid had an allergic reaction, you better just hope that I happen to be at the school to answer the phone to tell you what they had eaten that day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this parent came in, and she had knowledge about how to build a widget, which we don't even, you know, what is a widget? She knew. And now we fill out our snack diary online. There's this lovely little form that she created, and it filters into a spreadsheet, and people can access it at any hour. And then we also had this dad that Jeff's talking about, who is an arborist, who also diagnosed our poor little heart rot in our tree, and could tell locust wood, because that's what I want, is locust wood. He could tell it from, you know, 100 yards off, and he would rally people to go pick up wood. And then I said, you know, it'd be fun if we had some logs that were cut into blocks. And he did it, because he has multiple chainsaws, not just one.
Oh, Lisa, so, Lisa, I took pictures of these. I'll dig them out for you.
My eyes just popped out of my head.
These locust blocks, they're probably, what, 18 inches long and like 9 by 9?
I said it would be great 8 by 8. I've never measured them. They're pretty, right?
Yeah, yeah, they're beefy. I mean, they're heavy.
They're heavy.
About the size of that, like the hollow, but they're solid,
nice.
Solid
wow.
wood.
Wow.
And then they've got inside, I mean, this place has been around since the 40s, right? They've got their, like, original 1940s community playthings, hollow blocks that are just, they've got this beautiful patina.
My heart is beating so fast.
I wanted to sneak out with some, but Leslie keeps a pretty...
I know, and it's, like, so funny, because I think it's, like, interesting, because the stuff we have is so old. Like, the woman, we're hoarders, and...
yeah, you think? You should see their basement.
Oh, is that the wig comment? I think there was a wig in the basement.
Danita, if you're ever in, you get you got tickets to the basement. So the
sweet. I have relatives in Maryland.
You're coming.
There
so
you
of course you're coming.
There you go.
And so they, I think it's funny because, like, you can tell decades. You can look at the decades of what is drawn on the blocks, you know. So you have, like, these little Star Wars bots, you know, on some of them. And you have M16 written across one of our unit blocks, which, of course, is, you know,
Vietnam,
from probably Vietnam. Yeah. And or names written on them. So it's kind of fun to have that kind of stuff around.
So graffiti is good.
Go ahead.
Graffiti is good.
Yeah, graffiti is good.
Graffiti on the
blocks. It's history right there on
the
blocks.
It is history.
I love it.
And so is there someplace online, you or someplace else, that if there's a program or person out there that wants to know more about a co-op model or how to get going or resources for starting such a program, where do people go if we have resources?
They go to, and thank you for asking, because I'm serving as president of that organization right now. It's Parent Cooperatives Preschools International. Let me look at their, it's preschools.coop is the, hold on, let me just make sure that I'm getting it right. Anyway, what they'll have for you online, they'll have, there's resources that people can purchase for how to write bylaws. It's called the ABCs of Co-op. There's like, there's DVDs, there's all sorts of different resources. But mostly, once you join, you have access to other directors and teachers and parents who are members of the organization. So, like, I always say that I tell my board, it's like when I have a question, I put it up on our list, you know, the email list for the school, the co-op, and Oregon and California will always tell me the answer. That's my joke. So it's like, 'cause they always know what the thing is. Yeah, it's www.preschools.coop, C-O-O-P.
Excellent. And anything else before we wrap up? Anything else you want to share, talk about, discuss, dive into?
Well, I just kind of tell you about the ducks. I think I probably already did, but
I want to hear more. I love the ducks. People okay. need to go search the ducks.
Yeah, I think, and this will appeal to both of you. Because, I mean, all of you, is that because you know how I like anybody who wants to know about recycling and repurposing should always go to an early childhood educator first to find out what they should do, right? Because it's like, oh, I'll use that. Somebody asked me, do you want these Monopoly pieces? Oh, yes, I do. Just yes. The answer is yes. So, so when we went to Portland for a Parent Cooperative Preschools International meeting at Portland, Oregon, Andrea and I were driving in the back seat of a car with some very nice women that lived in Portland that had committed to like driving us around, and we got lost at one point on the bridge. There's like some bridges that cross that river and you have to be on the right one. Anyway, so we were driving down this road, and Andrea and I both looked out the window and saw this this dumpster at the same time outside of this interior design place, and we could see the samples sticking out of the top, and these poor women, we're like, we had to make a U-turn, and we're like, you need to stop.
On the bridge. Flip around.
She's like, you need to stop. Turn around. Stop. Just stop. And these women were like, what the hell is the matter with you? Oh, sorry. Are we allowed to say that?
No, you absolutely. Yes. Oh, I was just going to say hooker,
Andrea,
so you're good.
Andrea and I got out. We were feet up. Head down into this dumpster, filled our hands, arms, backseat of this poor woman's car. She was there, flustered. They don't know what to do with us. We're late already to the dinner. And, you know, and so we go to the dinner.
Stinking.
And we're right? And so,
sorry if we smell like dumpster.
But look, I mean, how could you pass that up? This is stuff that people pay for. I can't believe
it. Oh, you're preaching to the choir, man. We would all stop.
Yep.
Right? So we filled our suitcases up to the 50-pound mark to bring them home. But listen, so the next day we were going to dinner at a co-op school, Multnomah Play School, it's called, and they were having a rummage sale in the church that they belong to, and those ducks were there for sale, and we knew that we had already filled up our suitcases. There was no way to do it, and Andrea and I were on the verge of tears because we needed those ducks, and the director of Multnomah said, don't worry, I'll ship them to you. And so one day we got this giant FedEx box up to my waist. That's how big it was, filled with these ducks. And only, like I said, only early childhood educators would know the pain of having to walk away
from a box load of ducks.
Now, people listening, that is a true commitment to loose parts play.
Yes.
Yes.
Bravo.
Exactly. Exactly.
Did you shed a little tear because you had to leave it behind?
And then you had to trust that this woman was not going to steal them, because why wouldn't she?
Yeah, she's like, how come you want them so bad? Yeah.
But you know what's really interesting? This is the other thing I found about early childhood educators. One person's like compelling thing is not another person's compelling thing, right? So she was probably like, eh.
She was like, sucker.
I know, you're going to take a death. You know, she also knew what it meant to us. Like, we were, like, I'm telling you that we were actually on the verge of tears. We couldn't figure out how to get these back. So yeah, it was good. Oh, it was good.
That's sweet. Awesome. And Lisa, the other thing, that getting a tour of Leslie's basement would be a great thing. Other thing, she knows places that have great bartenders. Remember our bartender in Madison?
Uh-huh.
Ah, there's a similar bartender.
When we
came out to the table to check how the drink quality.
Yes.
Good,
nice.
Good bartenders in the area too. Yes, so if you guys are ever in the neighborhood.
Okay, give her a call.
Yeah, you're definitely coming by. Everyone's invited.
Well, thank you.
Well, it's time to wrap up. Leslie, thanks a ton
for
your time.
So
and
nice to
meet you. Where do people find you online if they want to learn more about your program?
TacomaCooperativeSchool.org.
Excellent. I hope people are going to check it out. And check them out on Facebook, too, because just the photos they share are educational and just wonderful. So this has been another episode of the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with something else. Thanks again, Leslie.
Thank you.
Bye, Leslie.
Bye, Leslie.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. If you like the show, check out our other offerings, Shots, Lisa's Book Report, and Tom Copeland's Taking Care of Business. And we'd love it if you shared them with friends, left a comment at myplayvolution.com, and gave them 5 stars on iTunes. Thanks. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.